The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Okay, so I'm really excited to have two great guests on, as always, for our Prague Report Top 5. And we are tackling possibly the hardest one of all of these that we've ever done, which is Top 5 Prague Guitarists. I'm sure we're going to offend a lot of people, but that's the fun of it. So first, let me bring on Kyle Fagala, who is somebody you guys know from the podcast before. He did the Top 5 Prague Drummers. It was very successful. So Kyle, thanks for coming back.
Roy, thanks for having me on here. As a drummer, it's maybe a little surprising to some that I'm on this, but I'm going to do my best. All the guitarists out there, you can send me all your ugly messages. I know they're going to be coming, so.
Yeah. Well, you know, I felt like, first of all, I like to mix up who comes on the podcast, and we have a lot of great Prague Reporters, as we like to call them, and Kyle being one of them. But Kyle is really good with putting together the notes and does his research and comes prepared. So for something like this, I think Kyle's perfect. And okay, so we always like to bring on a great musician, and sometimes we get, you know, legendary musicians. So like the guy we have here with us today, singer for Saga, one of the all-time great Prague bands, Michael Sadler. Welcome, Michael.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for doing this, man. I appreciate that. Of course, I met Michael on the last Cruise to the Edge, and we co-hosted a lot of things together. And so, of course, I had to bug him and get him to do this, which I'm sure he's regretting.
Yeah. If by the second. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, I'm looking forward to this. And it's funny because, not being a guitar player per se, I'm more of a keyboard guy when I do play an instrument. But I certainly have my thoughts about, well, put it this way, after playing over four decades with one of the best guitar players on the planet, I'm certainly opinionated about guitar.
So, well, you know, before we get started, and let me just say what we decided to do with the podcast. We're going to break it up into three eras, like we did with the drummer one, to make it a little easier to absorb. But Michael's going to do what we're going to call the classic era. So the years are, you know, fluid. I mean, it's not exactly, you know, whatever. So let's say, you know, mid 60s to, you know, early 80s, you know, late 70s. That's Michael's era. I'm going to be doing early 80s to about 2000, and Kyle will take the modern era, give or take. And that's just kind of how we'll do it. But before we get started, I want to just find out what's going on in the Saga world. Of course, you guys announced that you were calling it quits a little while back, but you know, you're coming back on the Cruise to the Edge in 2020, and I guess there's more stuff coming. So what's going on?
Well, you know, the cruise make us an offer we can't refuse. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, when it all went down, I made it clear. Basically, my statement was we were closing the door, but not locking it. Meaning, you know, things were up for not negotiation, but anything could happen. It was really the hard touring, like the grinding touring, album tour that we were kind of hanging up. Not to say that we wouldn't play if invited to the right. I mean, I was saying earlier that the luxury that we have after being together for over four decades is we're now in a fortunate position where we can kind of call the shots, and we can decide when and where we'd like to play, as opposed to doing it because we kind of have to, or promotional reasons for a new album and that. But there's a lot more freedom, and we get to spend more time at home, and we're able to, as I say, you know, be a little bit more fussy about when and where we go out on the road. So we've got a few things lined up this year, not the least of which is finally getting back into America. We're doing Prague Fest in October. I think that's the 11, 12, 13 of October. And that same week, a few days later, we're doing the Arcata Theater in Chicago. So we've got two U.S. dates coming up, as well as a show in the Dominican Republic, if you can believe that. That's in November. we've got some summer festivals over in Germany in the month of August, just five, I believe, and then a couple of Canadian ones coming up. So we're filling out the year. But again, it's come and go. We're not going out on the road for like 5-6 weeks at a time. So.
No, that's good. Yeah, you know what? I think, you know, Kansas was doing that also for a while, where they were touring, you know, just doing weekends.
Right.
Just because it was easier for them. And then all of a sudden, things got so busy. You know, it's nonstop, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, that maybe they'll
supply and demand.
Yeah, exactly. Are you also recording? Are you doing any solo material or other projects?
I'm doing other projects at the moment. A gentleman by the name of Tom Wallace, I'm doing some work for him, some vocals. I just did something for a band called Tiles. Chris Heron, the guitar player.
Yeah, I've heard of those guys,
He approached me about doing a song on his upcoming solo record, so I've just done that. I'm still involved with that Celtic rock opera in Europe called Excalibur. And they're doing their 20th anniversary show in middle of August in France, and I've been invited to do that one. So that's going to be fun too. And I've got a couple of songs to record for that as well. So all kinds of good stuff.
Awesome, man! Keeping busy. That's great.
Yeah.
And of course, you'll be on the next cruise, and we'll get to hang out. And we got to convince Kyle to come on. He's missed the last few.
Man, I'm dying to be there. Yeah, I've been on a couple. I was on Progressive Nation at Sea, and then I was on Cruise to the Edge a couple years after that. And it's the best time ever, especially if you like.
It truly is remarkable. I mean, I will be honest and say that the first time we were wasn't the inaugural cruise, but when we were invited, I had my sort of second thoughts, thinking, well, we're going to be kind of trapped, as it were, on a ship with all these fans for 5 days. Right. You can't go anywhere. But I found them to be incredibly polite and not invasive at all. I mean, very respectful, and you were still able to have your space, and they would come up and say, sorry to disturb you, and that kind of thing. So it worked out really well, and it was really nice to interact with the fans, as opposed to feeling like you were being besieged, if you know what I mean. So it was really cool, and the general vibe on the cruise is just so cool. It's such a sense of community, as it were. So, and everybody's, you know, some of the bands were like playing with each other, and like, I'll sing with that guy, and then this guy will play guitar on this guy's band. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, that's one of the best parts, is you get to see all these mashups of things you never would never get to see in a million years.
Right. These one-off performances. Yeah, they're one-off performances you can't see anywhere else. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Right on.
It's definitely a great time, and I love every time Larry and the gang are able to bring me back on, and which is always an honor. So let's jump into this and see what happens, and see if we can not do too much damage to our reputations.
I know why you gave me the 70. So we won't go into that.
Well, okay. Michael, what? You know, you might know some of these guys. You know, you've been around, you've toured and played with different people on bills. So, you know, I'm curious where you're going to go. But so the classic era, you know, your number five pick. Let's go ahead.
Well, I'm going to go back. I mean, generally, the ones I've chosen, just as a preface, is really ones that influenced me really in the early days of getting into Prague and you know, cutting my teeth on that genre and deciding that that's what I wanted to do. So I'm going to start with someone who is probably a household name and one of the most famous non-famous kind of underground word of mouth, because if you mention the name Frank Zappa to most people, they know the name, but I would say maybe 60 to 70% have never heard anything that he's ever written.
That's probably fair. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Who knows who Frank Zappa is? But they say, well, name a song. And they go, I don't know. If you say Moving to Montana Soon, they'll go, oh, yeah, I know that song. But other than that, he's not really known for that. He's known for being Frank Zappa. He was known for being Frank Zappa more than anything. But I mean, I really got into it. My first band was these three guys. It was a three piece that I joined And they were older than me, so they were the old guys. I was the young pup. And we went to see a film called 200 Motels. 200 Hotels. Oh, Motel, isn't it? Yeah. The Frank Zappa film. And it was like, what? It was after watching the film that I actually got into this music and discovered the Overnight Sensation album with Montana on it. But it wasn't really until much, much later, like decades later, that I revisited Frank Zappa and realized just what a genius he was, and his guitar playing was so out of the box and different at the time. But I didn't appreciate it then. I appreciated it many, many years later. I'll tell you a fun fact you may not know about Frank Zappa and that album. I certainly didn't know it till I did my research. On this song, Montana, did you know that the background vocals were done by Tina Turner and the Icats?
Wow.
Absolutely not. No.
You see, you learn something new every day.
That's cool. Now, you know what? You're 100% right. And what I think one of the problems with people discovering Zappa is there's no beginning point. He has 1,000 albums.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. It's ridiculous. I think when he passed away, it was like 60 plus or whatever. But afterwards, the estate released up to like 37 or 38 more albums. So to say he was prolific is a gross understatement.
And of course, I mean, you know, Steve Vai started with him and got loads of other people, Mike Keneally, all these guys that, you know, we're still going today. So I love that pick. I'm glad because, you know, always mentioned as one of these great guys, but definitely glad he's got his
own. I think, you know, as you say, I mean, people like Steve, if you mention this to most of those kind of guitar players, they will all mention Frank as an influence.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about Frank is he doesn't get pigeonholed as prog, and I think rightfully so, but he's one of these ones that could get left off a list like this. But I think from a progressive standpoint, from sort of an avant-garde or how he changed the genre, changed music, he absolutely belongs on here. So I like him on a list like this, although there's probably some prog purists that would say, well, technically.
Well, for the prog purists, they have to understand the meaning of the word. It really is just progressive moving forward. It's taking the genre one step, you know, thinking ahead and thinking out of the box. So if you go by the definition, he does belong on the list.
I absolutely think he belongs. That's a great pick. All right, so what would be the song that, I guess, if you're going to Montana's one you mentioned, but is there a song that you would say that's the one you got to hear if you're listening to Zappa?
Well, I would listen to Montana because it's got everything in it. I mean, the weird time changes, the melodies, the quirky, you know, the mood of the song, the lyrics, certainly. I think it's a great representation and a cross-section in one song of what he's capable of.
Very cool. Okay, so I'm going to get started. So I've been struggling with this one a lot because it's a weird cross-section of eras there. You know, you got guys that started in the 70s, you know, guys, you know, Alex Lifeson or David Gilmour or you name it, Steve, they're all still going through the 80s. And other guys are coming up and they're continuing into the 2000s. And where it begins and where it ends is very, I couldn't wrap my head around. It became really hard. So, you know, I made up my own sort of time frame and criteria, and it is what it is. So, and it will come down to obviously maybe my bias a little bit towards who I like listening to more, I suppose. So my top three or four picks, I think, were pretty much easier for me to pick. My number five is basically like a seven-way tie, but I'm just gonna pick one guy because I just like his music the best. I like his band. I like everything. And he's a brilliant composer. And a very unique voice. So all around kind of talent, on top of which he's an extraordinary guitar player. So I'm going to pick from, mostly known from the Flower Kings, I'm going to pick Roy Nastolt.
Interesting choice.
Yeah, and so, you know, not a shredder, but definitely an amazing player. And when you put together all the stuff that he does with, you know...
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The compositions and the different time signature riffs and I mean, he wrote a 60-minute song on one album. It's crazy stuff. And also like Zappa, I mean, prolific, not to that end, no one is, but prolific like crazy. He's been on some 50, 60 albums himself. Yep. And then of course got into Transatlantic in 2000 with Portnoy and Neil Morrison and Pete Travis from Marillion and, produced some amazing stuff there, and he's a great singer. So yeah, that's going to be my pick. I'm sticking with it.
I just wanted to comment on you when you said not a shredder. It kind of applies to the guitar world in the early progressives for sure. I mean, it's evolved to the point where there's people like Petrucci and that who just, you know, can play, his guitar is just basically flaming when he gets into it. But the guitar players weren't known as being shredders per se, for the purists, the prog purists. But it was more about the sense of all the instruments doing their part for the sake of the song and for the sake of the piece. So it wasn't really about showing off your prowess in terms of what you could do in terms of shredding. And it really was about how tasteful you could be. And sometimes less was more. So,
was one of the challenges because even because you could pick just shredders if you want. And then, and then you could also pick like David Gilmour and guys like that, and to me, David Gilmour is one of the all time greats. So, absolutely. You know, so it was really sort of a weird situation to pick, but I'm happy with it. All right, so Kyle, where'd you decide to go for? So you're doing modern, so that's sort of early to mid 2000s to today. That's what we're.
Yeah, I sort of took on the mantle of 2006 to present, but yeah, somewhere in that range. And I think just to say it, you know, Roy Nastolt could be obviously in this era too. I think I had an inkling that you would pick him, so I'm going to let you take him for your era. But one of my favorite albums by them is Banks of Eden. I think the work on that, I think it's an absolute masterpiece, and that's 2012, so that would be in my zone for sure. And he continues to do new music with John Anderson and lots of other stuff, so super prolific, great pick. My number five pick, I'm going to go with who I feel like, and we just brought up John Petrucci, but who I feel like is really the modern successor to John and what makes John great. This guitar player, he's extremely technically gifted, but I also think he has perfect control, tone, and feel. And it's not just about the shredding. I think he has a technique to do that, but it's more about the overall kind of emotional component and the songwriting component and how he adds to that. He's also a really world-class keyboardist and drummer and singer. And even for a list of modern era prog guitarists, I think this guitarist is a bit of a late bloomer. But I can't really see him not being on this list. So that is the guitarist, Eric Gillette. So Eric really only came onto the scene, as far as I was aware of him, in 2012. He tried out. There's a series of YouTube videos for Neil Morse's solo band, and I've watched him many times. It's a great little segment there. And he actually came in as sort of the utility guy. He was the rhythm guitar player, the keyboardist, and he was going to do those sorts of things. And when I actually saw Neil on the Momentum Tour kicking off in Nashville, it was really Adson Sadre that was the lead guitarist, and Eric was more doing rhythm parts. I then saw them again a year later. Flower Kings were opening for Neil Morse, and they did a little transatlantic encore at the Keswick, and he was now the lead guitar player because Sadre had some issues. And so I was sort of surprised to see him in that role. And to be honest, it wasn't really until about 2015 I saw him at Morse Fest playing The Door, the role, big concluding solo. He came out on the little catwalk, and I was like, oh my gosh, this guy's incredible. And that was just 2015. He then went on, of course, to join Neil Morse Band in full, became more influential in the songwriting and the singing. He's got a great high tenor voice, and he's contributed some of my favorite parts to Similitude of a Dream, which I think is a masterpiece. He's got two solo albums, Afterthought, where he plays everything, which is crazy in its own right, and then The Great Unknown, where he's got Thomas Lang on drums and then Haken's, Diego, and Connor on bass and keys. I've probably seen Eric, and I'm sure, Roy, you got me beat here, but probably seen him perform, I don't know, 20 times. I think my two favorite performances by him would be, I think the most impressive was with Mike Portnoy, Tony Levin, and Diego on Cruise to the Edge when they did Liquid Tension. He did Paradigm Shift, Acid Rain, and Universal Mind. And if you know those songs, I don't know like the overall minutes of guitar solos, but it's probably like 17 total minutes of guitar solos. He learned every note.
That's
he
the craziest,
everything.
Hardest stuff too. He's amazing.
It's crazy as stuff as John has ever written, and Eric nailed it exactly. And it was literally one of the most impressive musical feats I've ever witnessed. And then, of course, he was in Shattered Fortress, where he was joined by Haken's guitar players, but he was the standout in those. And even Petrucci himself commented that he nailed it. And I would say this of Eric, he's just 34. I think he has endless potential. I love the way he plays. I can't wait to see what he can do. Just in the 7 years that I've been aware of him, what he's done, I think his next steps are going to be amazing.
On the last cruise, I don't know, Michael, if you saw that, where he played with Jordan and Mike at the last night when
it was remarkable.
Yeah, he's amazing. So has he stamped his own footprint on the genre, in his own right? Maybe not necessarily yet, like the Petrucci's and so on, but I don't think that's takes away from his skill or what's to come, and he's a brilliant songwriter as contributed to the Neil Morse Band stuff. So I think it's just getting started for him. And I think it's great pick there.
Yeah. And I think for songs, the ones, I realized the two things that I mentioned are things where he's playing Petrucci's parts. And I only mention them just because they're sort of once in a lifetime performances. And I think the pressure of having to recreate what John Petrucci, arguably the greatest guitar player right now, having to recreate that, I can't even imagine the pressure of that. And I don't think most people would even say yes to that kind of a question. Would you do that? I think The Great Despair from The Great Adventure, which just came out, is incredible. I think just about anything off the Similitude of a Dream, but City of Destruction is great. And then I love just the emotional soloing on Broken Sky, Long Day, Reprise in there. And I think for me, at least, it's not that he's just technical. It's that he has that emotional component and can write songs and sing. And I mean, it's so anyway, that's why he gets the pick. I think he's awesome.
All right, great first round. All right, good. All right, Michael, back to you, number four.
All right, we're going back to the vintage era.
Yes,
that?
Vintage. I like that.
Vintage is good. I like vintage. my number four pick, again, it's going along with being part of the team, as it were, as a player. But I discovered Steve Howe with Yes, as a lot of people did with Roundabout, and the first album, and then of course Fragile. But what really tore it for me, and it's, I mean it's the whole band, but his playing was Close to the Edge. And I remember when I first heard Close to the Edge, I was almost in tears. Near the end of it, it's just so, it was so majestic and so emotional sounding, and amazingly uplifting melodies. And his playing again, he has a different style of playing. He's not a flash player, but he plays the right thing at the right time. He's so bloody tasteful, but at the same time, see, because he plays very clean, when he plays fast, it's kind of his version of shredding, but without the distortion and that. So it's hard to, you know, classify him as being a shredder at that moment, even though he kind of is. But the cleanliness, the attention to detail, and of course plays well with others, because if you play that kind of music to start with, it's so integral with one another. All the pieces all the pieces have to fit with one another, and you've got to, you know, step back when you need to step back. But I just find Steve Howe, he's who he is for all the right reasons. I mean, he is to be regarded as one of the best that ever was in the genre. And I'm sure that, I mean, he came up through the blues and fusion era, you know, times, as a lot of players did around that time. That I found their roots were in blues, and then naturally into sort of more of a jazzy feel, and then into the fusion, and then adding some rock into the fusion, which ended up being progressive rock. And a lot of bands ended up doing that. I mean, General Giant started as a band called Simon Dupree and the Big Sound, and and eventually got more and more fusion, and then added the rock element, and there you had it. So, but Steve Howe definitely he's a Hall of Famer as far as I'm concerned in this genre.
Glad he made the list. He had to make the list. you know, learning about Yes in the 80s, as I've mentioned before on the podcast, I was more in sort of the rocker vibe with, and so it took me a while to appreciate what Steve Howe was doing, you know, on the earlier records, because it didn't sound like, you know, Eddie Van Halen. But but once you really listen to that stuff, I mean, the stuff on Close to the Edge and on Fragile and all those albums, I mean, it's crazy, insane playing, and it's just, to even think of it is impossible.
Exactly. It's not your standard riff, because it can't be, because the music that you're playing along to or with is not standard. It's not your normal four bar blues or whatever, you know. Take it down to it's real prehistoric state, but. Yeah, it's choosing the right note to play at the right time and get out of someone's way. And like you said, unless you really focus on what he's doing, it can easily go past you as a sum of the parts, if you know what I mean.
Well, I mean, Close to the Edge is almost like they each went into a different studio, just played random stuff, and then the producer just put it all together, and it sounded
And it all fit beautifully.
Yeah, that's actually how that happened. No, I'm just kidding. I think for me, it's always interesting to study the genesis of a guitar player like this, because for me, I was born in the 80s, and so this is way before my time. And so you're right, Roy, that I connect more with stuff that comes out of like the Eddie Van Halen style of guitar playing and the metal style of guitar playing. And this is like really, you know, Steve Howe's guitar playing, it comes out of classical guitar and jazz, and even sort of like chicken picking kind of country guys like Chet Atkins and like Michael alluded
very much to. So yeah he's been quoted as having Chet Atkins as a major influence, so
that real clean but like extremely difficult style of guitar playing, right. And I think Steve kind of holds the mantle on that, and when you'll see him, you know, start on the classical guitar and then move to his electric, and His perfectionism is, I think, what stands out most to me, is that he's going to nail every single part exactly the same way, even at this old of an age. And it's impressive.
And still look like he's enjoying doing it, which is great.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And still kicking ass today. So actually, you know what? That goes really great into my number four, which is going to be Trevor Raven.
Nice.
Ah.
So we have a yes contingent. You know, I discovered Yes through the Trevor Rabin stuff, and even once I was learning about classic Yes, I always loved this guy's playing, his writing. I like his singing voice is amazing to me. His solo album, Can't Look Away, is just one of my favorite albums from that era, around like 88, I think, 88, 89. You know, Big Generator, I think, is still a great album. Not as progressive, but then they did Talk, which is amazing. And of course, they just reunited for a couple of years of touring with him and John Anderson and Rick Wakeman, which was, you know, proved that they could still do that stuff. And he had a big career in making soundtracks, and that's where he makes all his millions now, I guess. But just one of my all-time favorite players. There's some moments where he just completely shreds on even on 90125, and his use of effects and unique guitar sounds, and mixing all of those, and his production techniques really influenced, you know, bringing that proggy style back into the 80s when it was pretty much dead, or at least over here in the U.S. So. You know, I'm happy to include him on the list, Trevor Rabin.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember when Loner of a Lonely Heart came out, I thought I had no idea who it was. I thought there's no, and they announced it was Yes. I said, Yes? Are you serious? I thought, good for them. Because I think through that song and through Trevor's influence with the songwriting, they pulled in a whole new audience that he hadn't had before. And I mean, okay, some of the purists would probably think of that record as commercial or selling out or whatever you want to call it. I just call it being more accessible and then widening your audience. I never thought anything wrong with that. So,
yeah.
No, and it was, I mean, what was cool about it was it wasn't real the original lineup doing that. So it had a new blood into it that brought its own unique, you know, flavor. And, but I mean, if you go back and listen now, Changes is super proggy. I mean, crazy time signatures, yeah. And all that. Cinema is great, and so I think that album is absolutely held up as some of the other stuff. And you know what, I had the pleasure of meeting him finally a couple of years ago, and that was a thrill. Just, he's one of my heroes, so you know, I think he's the best. All right, Kyle, your number
four. Right on. Let's get into it. So I feel like going from era to era, it's so different. y'all's two married very well. This one doesn't at all. Okay, so this is going to be something a little different on a list of the best guitar players. I think one thing that's changed in prog and just in music in general, but especially in complex guitar music, is it's no longer about just a single lead guitar player. You have a lot of bands, and I can start naming them off, but they don't really have like a lead guy, and sometimes they have three guitar players, and they kind of, you know, fit their own roles, and maybe there's like the one guy that's usually the lead. But for this band, I'm gonna pick two guitar players, and that might cause some to groan. Okay, fair enough. But I think when you play really complex music, I think it is as much about the guitar interplay as it is any one player. So my number four pick is Richard Henshaw and Charlie Griffiths from Haken. And so they both play really complex stuff. And it's one of these things where it's almost like you just watch them and it's effortless. It's almost like, well, do you want to take the next solo? Do you want me to take it? No, I'll do it. You know, I know it's obviously planned out, but they're both capable of doing whatever. Now, I think Richard might write a little bit more than Charlie, but I can't imagine picking one over the other. That's just for me, at least. For me, I think why they make the list and why they're so great is they strike the perfect balance between melodic and technical guitar playing, which is kind of a theme for me. I want it to be listenable, because there's some music that's progressive or this in the fusion world that it gets too technical, that it gets boring to me. So it's got to hook me on a song level and on a melodic level. And then it helps when it's technical and it's interesting and it's different. So I saw them first on Progressive Nation at Sea. I think I hung out in a hot tub unknowingly with those guys. That's the thing about a cruise. And I was impressed, but I didn't really get it. I think when I first got it, was actually their theater show on Cruise to the Edge. And it, for me, it still stands as a top 10 performance. It was just magical. It seems like a weird word, but they're just masterful on stage. They're so tight. They're so technical. Seeing them with Shattered Fortress with Mike Portnoy kind of in more of a rhythmic or a supporting role was really great. Probably the biggest sounding concert I've ever been to. It was just a guitar lover's dream. And then the cool stuff that they do. I like that they're fun. I think they engage with their fans well, for what that's worth. But they'll do like a cover set, or they'll do a full album, special sets like that. I think for me, that stands out. And it makes them unique. And then I think the big thing really with their guitar playing is each album has a unique sound. It almost reinvents who they are as a band. For me, their highlight is actually Affinity, which is funny because some people, it might be one of their least favorite. But I just love that sort of mid-80s Rush sound, which is really like sort of that mid-80s Yes sound. I love that, and kind of grew up on that sort of the Dire Straits, Money for Nothing. Like, I like that kind of stuff. And so I love that throwback 80s quality. So anyway, That's my pick there, Haken, Richard, Charlie.
I've seen them on a Guitar World list of best guitarists as a duo. I think that they're one of the unique ones that it works. I mean, I think Queensryche, if you would do that, Chris DeGarmo and Michael Wilton, you could also argue are equal. Yeah. When there's some certain bands where both guys just share all the soloing and all the lead playing, and it's not one guy. It's not Slash and Izzy from Guns N' Roses type of split. So I don't have a problem with that, and I think they're both, I mean, if anybody has seen them play live, you know they both are ridiculous, so.
Yeah.
Another one. I couldn't agree more. Sorry, Jim, but when you were talking about Cruise to the Edge, one of the beauties of Cruise to the Edge is, especially for someone like me, is discovering all this new talent and this new wealth of young guys carrying the torch, as it were, which is very encouraging. But I remember seeing Haken on the ship the first time, and I remember thinking to myself, who the hell are these guys? Why don't I know about these guys? I was blown away. The musicianship, as you said, is absolutely stellar, and the way those two guys work off one another, and then, you know, trading solos and that, but unbelievable. I was absolutely blown away.
What's really great about them, and especially just being here in the U.S., and I don't know, maybe you see this when you are traveling on your, you know, doing shows and stuff, but I see Haken shirts now all the time in audiences, and that's amazing to me.
They really do.
Well, if this was top five prog band shirt designs, they'd be number one. They have really great branding.
Really cool
whoever designs their shirts, shout out to whoever that person is. So.
All right, good. All right, number three, Michael.
Number three. All right, well, I was talking about Steve Howe as number four, and just it just kind of edged out Steve Howe, but for a number of reasons. Most of these I've attached to an album that affected me at the time, so it's kind of part and parcel in a way. But I'll tell you the story first, and then I'll tell you who it was. I was in the first band I was in was indeed a blues band, a three-piece blues band. They hired me to be the singer, and I came home from work one day and went into the rehearsal room. We all lived together in the same house, And there was a piano there, and you know, I just looked at the guys. I said, "Why have we got a piano in the room?" They said, "Well, we decided that we should have piano in the band." I went, "Oh, okay. So we're going five piece. So who's going to play piano?" He said, "Oh, you are." And I said, "Do you know, are you aware of the fact that I don't know how to play piano?" And they said, "You know what? You'll learn." And I mean, that was me cutting my teeth on keyboard playing, you know, like Hunt and Peck, as it were, you know. But anyway, we eventually went from a blues naturally into this sort of more jazzy blues, and eventually into fusion-y kind of things. And then something happened. I mean, we still kind of had a rock feel, sort of, but it was almost straight out fusion. You know, the more notes, the better, the more different time signatures, the better, and that kind of thing. But what happened, what really tore it for me was the drummer went into Toronto one day, and he came back with this import album he'd bought. And he said, "Michael, I'm going to play something for you, and don't say a word until the whole thing's finished." So we sat there, he put on side one, and my jaw was on the floor. I didn't say a word. He put on side two. When it finished, I just remember looking at him and saying, "Jerry, I don't know what that is, but I want to start making music like that." And it was three friends from Gentle Giant. And I had never heard music like that in my life. And I thought, this is what they're calling progressive rock. Well, then I want to do progressive rock from now on forever. I don't want to say I didn't understand it, but I was just sitting there going, wow, it's the counterpoint. And although it was quite complicated, it was relatable in a sense, and accessible. I don't know what it is. And the grooves, you see, I'm a sucker for a great groove. And if you put some counterpoint on top of that and a melody on top, I'm all set. So Gary Green, I put him under the umbrella of plays well with others, because it really does take that kind of thing in a band like Gentle Giant. And the choice of the parts that he chose to play within the structure of the song. And I can just imagine what a Gentle Giant rehearsal must have been like, or a writing session right. must have been like. I mean, apart from the fact there were probably 1,000 ideas flying at the same time, just putting these pieces together, I would love to hear all the stuff they didn't use. But I mean, purely on the merit of you know, as I say, plays well with others, finding his place within that and his role and the counterpoint especially, and just how tasteful. But again, it's a different kind of tasteful and less is more. The only reason, as I said, he edged out Steve Howe is because the three friends had made such an impact on me. So, and it came out before Close to the Edge. So.
Well, there you go. Yeah. No, it's funny because there was no, you can't do that, you know, in their songwriting.
No, that was the beauty of that time. Also, you know, the early 70s and that there was a lot of, guys were playing for the audience as well, ultimately, but really for your peers. And it wasn't peer pressure as opposed to, hey, guys, check this out, like other bands, and look what we're doing now. And, oh, look what we're doing. It was a very healthy, not competition, but, you know, everybody not trying to outdo one another, but come up with cool stuff all the time. So there's a tremendous mutual respect, and it was just a really, really healthy time. And like you say, anything goes. There were no parameters. There were no rules. You know, some people took it to the extreme. It's like, you know, the weirder, the weirder, the better. But, you know, for me, it's always come down to a blend of the two where I love structured songs. Ultimately, they can be 7 or 8 minutes long, but I like it to have some kind of structure, like you do a cool part, please come back and do that again, as opposed to, you know, playing a part for, you know, 35 seconds or 45 seconds, then move on and never come back. I'd like, what happened to that cool part that got me going? So Gentle Giant they've got all that. They have all the musicianship, the cleverness, but all within the context of a well-structured song. And the counterpoint is just killer to me. So.
Very cool.
So for that reason, Gary Green is Chris Reid.
Awesome. Awesome pick. Great pick. Yeah. Great band. Very cool. Okay. So, you know, I think my next pick sort of goes in line with that a little bit, too.
Are you changing your picks around?
No. I had mine written down, and actually, well, it's not the same band, but stylistically, right. I think it works. So, all right. So I wanted to also pick, you know, some of these guys I'm way more into musically, you know, things that I'll listen to repeatedly. And then there's, you know, some guys that I know are just amazing that I maybe just don't listen to as much just for whatever reason. This guy sort of falls into that. Although I know he's a genius and I've seen him play live a number of times and it just blows my mind every time. And that's Adrian Belew, who, you know, is on the Cruise to the Edge all the time. You know, obviously from King Crimson and a million solo albums and things that he does. And just you, one of these guys that you just know is amazing. You know, but I don't own all the albums. It's not like that type of thing for me. But what I do know of him, I think, is just genius. And, you know, I mean, some of the stuff that he did with King Crimson is incredible. If you watch, there's a whole bunch of great live videos that you can see online on YouTube and stuff that is just phenomenal. And that's with him and Bruford and Tony Levin and Robert Fripp. I mean, that band at the time was just, like, ridiculous.
Amazing.
And then his trio... with Julie Slick and I forget the drummer's name.
That was amazing. That was amazing.
Yeah. Oh. And so I've seen them play a few times on various you know, cruises, and he's just awesome.
Adrian was actually the first person that I met before Progressive Nation at Sea. We were in Miami. We were, you know, getting ready to get on the boat the next day. And so that sort of for me kicked off the era of like meeting your heroes. I think Morris Fest maybe edged it out a little bit, or I don't remember the exact dates of all that. But we sat down at the bar, my brother and I, and we looked next to us and we're like, that's Adrian Belew. And he had like a Hawaiian shirt on or whatever. And as a lot of people have experienced being around him on cruises, he's absolutely the nicest guy on earth.
He really is. So he'll talk to anyone.
Like hours, and he had all these funny stories and just always so happy and positive. And he seems like the kind of guy that he loves a cruise like that because he loves being amongst people just in general. Not to mention incredible musician. For me, I like to judge musicians by how wide ranging they are. And so you want to talk about progression of music. He's worked with Zappa. He's worked with Bowie, Brian Eno. He's worked with Talking Heads. I mean, obviously King Crimson there in the early 80s. I mean, just masterful stuff. I mean, really kind of at the apex of his game at that moment. And then he's gone on. I think he's won like a Grammy for his solo work. And I'm with you, Roy. It's not one that I just like sit down and like, I'm going to listen to Adrian Belew right now. But when you watch him, when you see him live, he just comes alive. I mean, he's amazing.
Yeah, so. he's and stylistically, I mean, he does everything. So it's right. Not just his albums are as diverse as anyone, and really interesting. Always, you know, he's always playing like weird rhythms together with other, you know, type of drumming and percussion, and it's very fascinating, interesting stuff.
He's unorthodox. You can't really connect him to one thing or like one influence. He'd have, you know, 50 influences or something. So I love that about him.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, cool. Kyle, number three.
Number three. I'm going to do one that's going to make Roy very happy. but let me give my little intro here. Okay. I think my number three pick, it's tough doing a modern list because you wonder, like, in 10 years, what are we going to think about this list? Is there someone I'm leaving off or forgetting or whatever? But my number three pick is one that I feel like people should know more about. I think it's easy to pick guitarists that are well known and that everyone knows their music. But I want to pick someone that obviously people know their music. They get a lot of listens, you know, on Spotify or on YouTube or whatever, but not as much as some of the others. He uses both fretted and fretless guitars, which is sort of a newer trend. You'll see other guitarists like Bumblefoot does this. And I think his unique sound really comes from that use of that fretless guitar. He'll also do things like use a digital guitar or even play a Jameson. And that is the guitarist from Thank You Scientist, Tom Monda. I know Roy's a huge fan of that one. So he's got a degree in jazz, which is, again, I think another developing trend with a lot of modern guitarists is that they've got a lot of backgrounds in certainly academic music styles, so classical and jazz and fusion, things like that. And so it's not like they're only inspired by Hendrix and Page and Eddie Van Halen. And they've also had the internet. And so the internet allows us to accumulate knowledge and techniques and to learn at a rate that's just absurd. I mean, you see 7-year-olds that are better than I'll ever be on the drums. And so I think you see that in a guitar player like Tom, who's very young, that he's learned from teachers that have had this accumulated knowledge. He's also had the internet to kind of infuse into the way that he learns and plays. And I like that he approaches the guitar uniquely. And so the way he plays doesn't sound like someone else. I saw them first, actually, on the New Millennium stage at Progressive Nation at Sea. They were by far the most popular act. And the audience in the little area where that you could sit was so small that, and I think there was maybe some turbulence at the time on the cruise ship. And so people were sitting down. And there was this awesome moment where there was a seated mosh pit. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
People were kind of rolling around on the ground. Great sense of humor. And I guess if you aren't aware of them, they sound a lot like Coheed and Cambria, I guess I would say, but which is sort of a progressive band as well. But Thank You Scientist is certainly a lot more eclectic. They include horns and just a range of styles. And
the singer sounds like Coheed. I don't know if the rest of the music does. I think
at times, yeah.
I think they're very almost Zappa-esque. Kind of.
Right, that's a good one.
I seem to remember they were on one of the cruises with us, and if I'm not mistaken, Mike Thorne, our drummer, came up to me. He had caught their first show, and he said, "Have you seen Thank You Scientist yet?" And I said, "No." He says, "Oh, you got to check them out, man. It's so weird and cool." And I was like, "Whoa, okay." because the scheduling was such that, you know what it's like on the cruise, I never had a chance to actually catch them. So
I like having Tom on your list. I like how your list is because these guys are the new wave and a new era of this music, and their names people should know about whether or not they know about them now. That's what I think. So I think it's cool.
Well, they're carrying the flag, you know, they're moving things forward, and I like that. I really appreciate that.
And by the way, Thank You Scientist has a new album coming out next month. So
there you go.
Plug for them.
And the most recent single off of that, Terraformer, I think is incredible. I think it really highlights his use of the fretless guitar and kind of what all he's capable of, among many other songs. But I like that one a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Michael, you're number two.
Number two. Okay. Everyone's got every choice has a little story before. That's just the way I roll.
It's great.
This one predates Saga. I was in a band before Saga. I was in a band with Jim Crichton, bass player, called Truck. And I was hired to replace the singer at the time. It was basically a cover band. And very eclectic kind of cover band. We would do things like Ricky Don't Lose That Number from Steely Dan and Watch It at the Skies from Genesis. So we were kind of all over the map. But one thing we did have was a Mellotron. And if you had a Mellotron at the time, this was going way back. One of the first. And if you had a Mellotron, there were two songs you had to play. One was Watcher of the Skies. You couldn't have a Mellotron on stage and not play that song. And the other one was Court of the Crimson King. You had to play that song. Consequently, we did. Which brings me to, obviously, Robert Fripp. And because of that song, I discovered it's much like Zappa in the sense where I saw the movie and then the song. And then later, years later, I delved into and really found out what he was about. It was through doing Court of the Crimson King that it wasn't just a band doing this song. When I actually listened to the album and then consequent albums after that, I realized, wait a minute, who is this guy? And what I love about Fripp, you talk about being different and unpredictable from one album to the next. And I mean, when you say no rules, that's the guy. I mean, whatever he decides to do, it's like, you want to do weird, you want to do strange. I've got an idea. I want you to stand on your head and play this part, but whatever. But I just love his out-of-the-box thinking, the unpredictability. Again, he's not a flash player. He plays cool stuff. He invents things. He invents sounds that you can make with the guitar, a different way of looking at using the instrument. So for that reason, and apart from the fact that we got a lot of gigs because we did that song, I'll give Robert Fripp a big nod. Again, it was tight for number one and two, but and we're going old school anyway because that's the era I have. But Robert Fripp, certainly, and I think if you talk to a lot of these modern prog guitar players, they will mention Robert Fripp, again, as a major influence. So Robert Fripp, number two.
Yeah, two Crimson guys on the list, but
that, absolutely. Yeah, yeah,
not really a surprise.
When you mentioned Adrian Belew, I went, "Oh, that's a nice segue to mine."
Yeah, there you go. You guys collaborated on this. There's some collusion going on.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, they're very similar. I feel left out on this. Yeah, very
so cool. Another interesting marriage for Robert Fripp to Belew too is that he also played with Brian Eno and with David Bowie. So there's some of that.
That's right.
Like, who is like the avant-garde studio go-to guitar player? And these two guys were really that. And obviously because of their work with King Crimson and things like that. But, also, my favorite thing about Robert Fripp is, as far as I know, the only guitarist that sits on stage,
right.
Which I'm admittedly not a huge fan of that. It's sort of lame and weird, but it just kind of fits him. And he's
Hackett did in the early Genesis days when he had the beard and the glasses and
right
he
on.
Sat on the stool. So
it's just a funny thing that
it is.
You would never think to see that on stage, but it was like at a time where who says I can't sit down? You know, so I'm going to sit down and be amazing. So,
yeah.
Very cool. Okay, so I'm going to jump in with my number two, and so this is a sort of a weird choice, but to me, it's really not. I think he's one of the best guitar players ever in the world. Can play everything. He's been in a number of bands and has his really own distinct, unique sound. So I'm going to go from, well, it depends what band you want to pick, from the Dixie Dregs, from Kansas, from Deep Purple, Flying Colors. I'm going to go Steve Morse with my number two.
Oh, yeah.
And is he a traditional prog guy? You know, maybe that's debatable a little bit, but he was in Kansas, so that's prog to me. Flying Colors is a prog band that's modern, but still. And Dixie Dregs to me are sort of that prog / fusion / jazz thing, whatever they do.
Yeah.
But if you listen to things like Odyssey and even stuff from the Free Fall album, that's very progressive, and he has a really orchestral, original sound to his guitar. It's always been this one same guitar that he plays, and just one of my absolute favorite tones, the way he solos, the way he plays with harmonics. I've seen him live, and I've seen him do the most amazing things. He once showed up late to a gig and he had broken his wrist, and he had a cast on his left hand through, just wrapped around over the thumb, and he played the entire night like that.
My God.
And shredded. Wow. It was ridiculous. And then there was another time I saw him play. There's this song Stress Fest, which I don't know if you know that song, but it's a million miles an hour for 5 minutes. And it's beautiful. And so he goes in to play that song, and midway through, the high E string snaps. And I'm telling you, without missing a beat, he transposed the entire song onto the other strings and finished the song. And it was like, and it's the most difficult song in the world. Wow. And it was like he didn't even bat an eye. There was no changing guitar. There was nothing. And he just moved it up a couple of frets, finished the entire thing. So I was like, you know what? That's just genius to know the guitar that well that you're not even fazed by that. So I just think he's great. And I can't not put him on a list like this. I don't care what era it is. I can't not include Steve Morse, who I think is just one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, great pick. I knew it was going to be on here. I know you're a huge fan of his just in general, but I think he makes it for sure. Maybe you call Dixie Dregs more of like an instrumental rock kind of thing, and sort of along the lines of like, what do you call Satriani and Vai and Eric Johnson? Right. I mean, like, how do you classify them? But for me, the Dregs fit more into sort of like a Kansas-ish, you know, prog band. I think they fit that. And then obviously he's in Flying Colors, which would be in my, you know, era, but I'm excited to see them at Morse Fest for sure. I'll be sitting front row, probably right next to you, Roy. So we'll rock out to that. But I love the clean nature of his guitar playing. Also, he's a singular player. When you hear a Steve Morse solo, you know it's Steve Morse. It just has that sound and that tone that is characteristically him. Well, all right. Are you ready for number two?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's do it. All right, so number two, this guy's best known for playing with Steven Wilson, the Aristocrats, Asia, GPS, and even, this is my favorite, Hans Zimmer. he's also got some great solo work. He does plenty of guest appearances. He's one of these guys, he just seems like he's working all the time. And I love him because he's a true chameleon on the guitar. He plays everything well. So he's a utility guy in that regard, but amazing at everything. And this is Guthrie Govan. Tell me how to say his last name, Roy. I know you like.
I don't know. I, to be honest, that may just as well. You know me with names, but I always thought it was Govan, but I don't know that that's right either. To be honest,
well, it's all the people who exactly know how to pronounce his name. I apologize. I'll call him Guthrie from now on.
Guthrie.
You know, he's known for a lot of different sort of techniques. He'll slap and he'll tap, and he does a lot of slide guitar playing. It's always tasteful, and he's another one of these guys that he combines really world class technique with what I really love, which is world-class tone and balance and melody and an ability to play to the song. And I think that's why he's in such high demand. One of my favorite stories about him, and this is true of a lot of really great guitar players, not even just prog guitar players, but when you're a session guy and you show up and you can do amazing solos that, you know, people listen to hundreds of times because they're incredible, and you find out that he did it in one take. He did that with a couple of Steven Wilson tracks, Drive Home from Raven, and then Regret Number 9 from Hankin' on a Race. The word is he did it in one take, and there's some YouTube videos to prove it, which is bizarre if you know those solos.
The Drive Home solo is one of the best.
In one take. I love that. That's great. So, you know, then they got to go out and have coffee because they were done early, I guess. So I think also if you look him up on YouTube, he's also just a real gentle kind of spirit. And when he talks about guitar and guitarists, it's sort of like if you listen, like I'm really into film, if you listen to like Tarantino or Scorsese discuss film and movie directors, that's what it sort of feels like. It's like he knows it all. He's a student of guitar, of guitarists, and he can play it all. I'll sort of end my little spiel with this, is that Satriani in an interview with Guitar Player magazine in 2015. He said it, I think, better than I could. He says, what sets Guthrie apart is that no matter what he's doing, picking, tapping, slapping, playing legato, whatever, he mixes everything up gracefully and absolutely nails each approach. And all the while, the music sounds natural. So it kind of fits sort of what I love about him. So in terms of his key songs, Ancestral from Hand Cannot Erase, I saw a commenter describe it as the new Comfortably Numb. His solo comes in at the 4-minute mark on that song. It's amazing. And then the Aristocrats, if you like weird stuff, if you like fusion, Stupid Seven is great. And I think Bad Asteroid is.
Well, do you have his solo album? Have you ever heard that one?
I've listened to it. Yeah, I mean, there's good stuff. And it's all
the song Waves.
Place.
The song Waves is unbelievable. That's one of the best things ever. Look, he's awesome, and you know what? I've heard him recently on some stuff from Ned Sylvan, without knowing it was him, I could tell it was him. And sure enough, I love when you then look it up and you're right. You know, that's so so cool. But yeah, one of these guys that has his own sound. He's awesome. All right, Michael, you're number one?
Well, before I say the number one, I just have to reiterate what you said at the beginning. And anytime you do lists like this, obviously you're going to leave a whole bunch out, and you're going to do it, and then afterwards you're going to go, oh, I should have mentioned him, I should have mentioned him.
There's five guys left that you haven't mentioned.
Names have come up while we've been doing this. And, these are the five that I have right now. If you ask me 3 weeks from now, it might be a different list, but... be that as it may, before I go to number one, there's a lot of honorable mentions. I mean, from that era that I'm dealing with, you're looking at Martin Barr, you're looking at David Gilmour, and there's just too many to mention. But they all have their place and their influence on other guitar players. But I had to go with this as number one for a number of reasons. Again, I'm judging a lot of this on how much they have influenced where guitar players are today. And I'm not generally a fan of jamming. I've never been one to go, hey guys, let's get together and jam. I just I'd rather do something structured and work on a part. Maybe it's going to come out of a jam perhaps, but I've never been one for an open jam. Having said that, when I first heard this album that I'm about to mention, it felt like a jam. It felt like these guys just sat down and started playing, and then it kind of developed into something, but I didn't find it. And then it was over after I don't know how long, but it didn't feel like it had been a jam because it wasn't. It was actually worked out, but it gave the impression that it was just impromptu and just, it was so relaxed and just natural flow to it. And I will say one thing about this gentleman, apart from being so influential on a lot of guitar players, I've never seen a picture of him not smiling, and he has this very contented smile on his face, and I know why in the meantime, because of what he practices in his daily life and how he sees life in general. But it's John McLaughlin, and Birds of Fire, when I think it was the bass player put it on, I discovered it, the band I was in at the time, and he put that on. And if you know what I mean, it just kind of, it starts from where it is and it just kind of develops, and it doesn't really become a song per se, but it's very satisfying. And it's almost like they're jamming. Let's try this part on this for a bit. Let's play that for a little bit, a few more minutes. And then he starts doing his thing, and it's like, wow. And again, very different approach to melodies. And you're not supposed to do that on guitar. And I just found it mind blowing. And the feel of Birds of Fire was just from the very first note. And also the work he did with Miles Davis and Bitches Brew, which is absolutely outstanding. Anybody who's never heard that really must check that out. But I think John McLaughlin is really, if you want to use the word pioneer of that kind of or the progressive approach to playing or fusion, whatever, and marrying fusion and rock together. He yeah. really was right there at the beginning of it all. And you'll, again, you know, ask a lot of guitar players, and you mentioned John McLaughlin, I go, oh yeah, John, you know, almost like, you know, sacred, you know, you mentioned John's name, you know, so
yeah.
John McLaughlin is at the top of the list. Again, there's so many to choose from, but I just think John, he just, and that smiley, you know what I mean? He's just always smiley because he's Mahavishnu. I mean, he's just, he's there. So, yeah.
You know what? It's you're right. I mean, it's a name that absolutely belongs, and it completely escaped me as one that would end up being on the list. But you're 100% right.
You know what I mean? And he's he has found it sounds funny, but he has found peace. He has found his slot, and he's happy. You know, and it comes through in his playing, and it's just, I don't know, it's just something about him. But certainly he was there from the very beginning, and then yeah, honorable, not even honorable mention. He's number one for me.
Nice, very cool. Nice pick, man. So yeah, so you got a bunch of. We're gonna go back around and do some honorable mentions because there's some big names left off.
Yeah,
there,
right? I know.
That, but again, you look at the list and go, "Tell me who
you
to take off."
Can't argue with it,
right? Yeah, that's what I tell me who to take off the list, and just you can't.
Right.
So, all right. So I'm gonna go. My number one. I liked this era for me because the number one was the easiest, I think, of all of the eras. And so I'm just going to jump into John Petrucci at number one, who
shocked.
I think it's
I'm shocked. I would have never guessed that one.
Right, the no brainer for the '90s era. I mean, what can you say? The Dream Theater and his guitar playing and Images and Words and those few albums that changed my musical life. It had the greatest effect on me. More than any band that I had ever listened to, and it changed how I thought about songwriting, how I thought about what long songs could do and be, and songwriting approach, and it's the way he plays changed everything. I mean, if you go back to the Dream Theater's third album, Awake, back then no one knew what to make of it, and now they're drop tuning and all the seven string guitar, that album could come out now and it's as current as anything out now, and it came out in 95. I mean he was way ahead of the game, and he's still just ridiculous. I saw them live a month ago, and the new material from Distance Over Time is amazing, and he's at the top of his game right now.
It's a great and slightly obvious choice, but rightly so. I mean, but I just jump in and say, I remember when the song Pull Me Under came out, and I thought at the time, I heard the song and I thought, wow, they got it right. They bridged that you know, between progressive world and accessible rock song, and they've just got this is a perfect blend. It was, to me at the time, I heard Pull Me Under, I thought, strong chorus, great. It's cohesive. It's got musicality to it. And I thought, you know what? They've done it. They've absolutely bridged the two worlds together. And I remember being slightly jealous, going, I wish I'd written that.
So. Yeah, it's funny, Roy. If you remember when we did Top 5 Drummers, there was a clear consensus pick for this same era with Portnoy. So it's, you know, every opportunity I have to mention Mike, of course, but the fact that the two of those were in that band at the same time is really incredible. And not that the other three are any slouches by any stretch. But yeah, I mean, who would you pick other than Petrucci for this?
Right.
Doing with one guitar what, you know, might take two or three otherwise, and doing it so cleanly and just so precise, and really changing the way that guitar is played, I would say, in progressive today. I think every single person on my list of the modern guitarist was obviously influenced by Petrucci.
And he's another of those that makes it look effortless.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So. I mean, look, guitar playing got so easy he became a bodybuilder.
Yeah, I was gonna say he had to get into growing his beard out and bodybuilding. He's just I think he cooks now. He's just bored. Yeah, right.
With his free hand while he's doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, just the most soft-spoken, nice guy you'll ever meet. So
I've never had the pleasure.
So. Yeah, very cool. Very cool dude. Okay, so Kyle, you're number one. Let's see.
I've really loved this. Michael, you've been great on this. I love the stories. I love the perspective. I also appreciate that your top five, I think from what I would think of as like, you know, Prague magazine or something, like what they might pick for top five, yours is very different, which I appreciate. I think that's great.
If nothing else, first of all, yes, this has been great. Also, I've had a wonderful time. But my choices were really from a musician's point of view as well. So, and the kind of influence that those kind of guitar players had on where it became and where you know the guitar players are at now. So, it's a different take as opposed to, like you say, reading a Prague magazine and that era and the obvious choices.
Yeah, the expected picks, let's say.
There
so,
you go. Yeah.
Well, I do think my number one is expected. I think from almost any perspective, not even just Prague guitar, but just guitar in general, I think this guy is probably going to show up number one on a lot of lists. And I think deservedly so, just like with Petrucci. So, and it's funny, he actually played with Guthrie in 2015 on the G4 tour. Although he's not a guy that gets around as much as some of these other guys. He mainly sticks with his own crew. But he's got an extremely unique style of playing. It combines an emphasis on classical and jazz, melodic finger picking. It's also a funk influence. He's best known for this sort of rhythmic double thumping slap technique that he does. And he's best known as a member of, which is crazy, Roy has said this before, is that one of the most popular progressive rock bands is a djent instrumental group, and they fill like small theaters and venues, and it's Animals as leaders. And so this is a guitar player, Tosin Abasi, who I also saw for the first time on Progressive Nation at Sea. That was a really incredible cruise in hindsight. And so I think also a couple fun facts about him and news that will make all musicians feel like complete losers. Tosin didn't even pick up a guitar until he was 12. He had played the clarinet before. And then also, even more interestingly, I saw an interview with him and they're asking, you know, who did you learn from and where did you develop your technique? And he didn't take any lessons for the first 10 years on the guitar. So not until the age of 22. He rather learned by watching heavy metal and hair metal guitar technique videos. So like Paul Gilbert and some of these videos from back in the day. And if you were, you know, I watched all the old drum videos and some of them were super cheesy, but that's really where he learned sort of, you know, in his room. So I guess pre to the YouTube era, he learned in that way. Like I said, I like to study the genesis of guitar players and where they really get their influence. And I think he claims two main influences, which I think helps explain his style. Javier Reyes, who's the other guitarist in Animals as Leaders, a real classical guy. He says he learned that from him. And then his other influence, which I think is interesting, is Evan Brewer. It's a bassist that he played with in his first band, Reflux. But really, Brewer was influenced by the Wooten brothers. And so Victor Wooten, really well known for his double thumping bass slapping technique. And so he picked that up from like Mean Streets by Eddie Van Halen is sort of like maybe the first example of that. And that's really what gives Tosin's guitar playing this combination of classical and melodic, but also with this very percussive feel that I really don't know that it existed before he did it in the way that he did it. So a million other things I could say about Tosin.
Yeah, but man, you've gone on.
If you've never seen him, I hate him. Well, he's just, it's hard to like encapsulate what makes him great. And so I needed 3 pages to say it. So there you go. Sorry, Roy.
Listen, no, I agree. I think anybody that's following sort of the modern era of guitarists would agree. I think he's amazing. And, you know, I know Petrucci mentioned somewhere that the first time he saw him, he came to one of his guitar camps or something, and he saw him, and he was just like, what are you even doing? It wasn't normal. He doesn't play normal guitar. It's like an alien, watching an alien play guitar, what he does with it. It's a new way to play. It's pretty crazy stuff. And so they're cool, and he's having just phenomenal success that an instrumental three-piece prog metal band shouldn't have in 2019. So, yeah. You know.
I'm glad they are. It's a beacon of hope.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, so let's throw around some names that maybe we missed. I see Alex Lifeson's not on here. Could be in all three eras, maybe mostly, you know, vintage or classic, but certainly could.
Alex is an interesting one because he's not a shredder in the traditional sense, although he can shred in his way with his tone. It's a very, very specialized tone that he has.
Yeah.
And the way of approaching that. So, yeah, not a traditional shredder, but as I say, I mean, he's a great player and he can certainly do the riffs and the runs, but he definitely has an individual sound, and all three of those guys are just really, really nice guys, you know.
Yeah, but he would definitely be on my list. I think Alan Holdsworth from like an experimental.
Oh yeah,
right. We didn't have Holdsworth on here, but again, is he more jazzy? You know, I don't know. Maybe,
yeah,
but
he arguably sort of could be on here as well. Genres, yeah.
I know. Maybe we'll get some flack for not having Steve Rothery on here from Marillion, but I think, you know, him and David Gilmour are sort of in that same kind of more emotive, you know, very clean kind of dramatic style, and maybe don't fit as much of the craziness type of playing that I think we all focused on here. And
they're both incredibly tasteful players, and choosing, you know, the right note at the right time, and melody sometimes is everything. And but within the context of doing like a beautiful melody, going to a note you don't expect. It's just, you think a run is going to end on a certain note, and you're ready for it, and then you go somewhere else with it. But it's even better, and you're like, wow.
Well, the king of bending notes at the last minute is David Gilmour. Always.
Oh, yes.
Would always get that extra little thing and then lift, and then it's just awesome. Well, I think the only one that's really, to me, standing out that's missing that I think is just incredible would be Steve Hackett. But again, I can't argue with anybody else that we listed. So,
what about middle era? Because that was mostly classic we were naming. I think those are great additions. Gilmour would have to be there for me. For middle era, you've got, and it's so hard to classify as what's prog, but I think you've got the godfathers of like super guitar, like guitar heroes like Steve Vai, Satriani, Yngwie. I don't think of them as prog, and so they wouldn't have made my list. But obviously, some might see there. And then you've got like the tent post prog bands. You've got like Chris DeGarmo from Queensryche. You've got Jim Matthews from Fate's Warning. I mean, goodness, Alan Morris from Spox. You know, he has a place on this too, I think.
The funny thing is, you mentioned people like Bai and that, and sometimes there are guitar players like that and Satriani and that. Sometimes in terms of it touching the prog world, it's through association or someone that they played with. So as a rule, they're not considered prog players, but if they, you know, they will occasionally play with an outfit or a group of guys that are considered considered prog. So,
yeah,
again, through association, they can be included in a way. So,
yeah. Not right. They're not like necessarily traditional, so maybe they get sort
but
of.
But they can obviously.
They can absolutely be. I don't know, modern. I think Paul Wagoner from Between the Buried and Me is the first one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
That I think is phenomenal. Who else are we?
Guys who almost made my list: Misha from Periphery for really sort of inventing djent. It's probably Meshuggah, but for really bringing that into prog. I think Chris Letchford from Scale of the Summit's incredible. There's a guy named Pliny, but he kind of fits to me like this Steve Vai sort of subgenre of just he's just amazing at the guitar. But Steve called him the future of exceptional guitar playing. I love Bumblefoot, but for me, he's just not done enough in prog to really make the list. But then you got guys, you know, like Steven Wilson, like who's done more in this era of prog. But I don't think of him as a guitar player first. I think of him as a lead singer and a song.
Yeah, he's a songwriter, producer to me.
Right.
Yeah.
What about Paul Gilbert?
Sure. I mean, he can make
phenomenal.
In this.
Again, in the Steve Vai Satch range, you know.
Right.
But he's guested on some prog stuff, as we know.
That's what I mean. Like Neil Morris by association. And all that. Right.
Yeah. So.
I mean,
those are the extras that on the list that. That easily belong. And look, this is all for debate. Anybody that wants to comment and tell us where we went right, where we went wrong, it's all fun. And of course, we love all these guys. They're all amazing. So, Michael, this was a blast. And you really came red. You came strong with like facts and stories. Fantastic.
I did my research, man.
thank you, man.
It's been great. I loved it. I mean, anytime you want to do it again, just let me know. As long as it's not singers.
Man, we got a lot of pressure to tackle singers. We did the drummer one almost a year ago, and we waited a year to get to this one because these are just hard. You know, a lot of times we do top five songs of or something of one band, which is sort of that's easy.
It's impossible. It's fun. I love doing it. Michael, I got to tell you, I'm 35 now, but I've been in a band that's covered On the Loose. It's a huge honor to be here on the podcast with you. Hope to see you. Maybe I'll catch this cruise and get to see you guys play. But
That would be great.
Love being here on this podcast with you for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, sir. I really appreciate that.
All right, guys. Thanks, Michael. Always an honor. Great to meet you on the cruise and get to know you. And thanks again.
My pleasure, guys.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.